We want to thank you for joining our Men's Summit podcast today. We hope that this encourages and challenges you in every area of your life. In this episode, we want to share Pastor Jeremy Foster's message from Men's Summit 2019. Jeremy is the founding and lead pastor of Hope City Church in Houston, Texas. Let's listen in.
Man, what an honor it is to be here. I'll tell you what, when they told me, like, hey, listen, you're going to be speaking. It's going to be great. We've got Pastor Jensen Franklin. I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's great. Love him. Nervous. And they were like, we got Mike Todd. I was like, oh, that's great. And then they're like, and right before you is an astronaut. I'm going to be like, hey, guys, look at this. I can do that. Look at that. Look at that, guys. I'm glad each and every one of you guys are here. My name is Jeremy. I pastor a church in Houston, Texas called Hope City. And we are honored. Got some dudes here. My Hope City homies. And glad to be here at Gateway Church and love what God is doing at this church. And I love your pastor. Pastor Robert, I love you, man. And I'm so grateful that you're here and we're honored to have you. And I'll tell you what, man, it is a blessing when you come to a house that is a word-based church. Y'all, we played a video of Pastor. This is how good he is. We played a video at all 15 of our services, all four of our campuses. We played a video of Pastor Robert preaching, and he crushed it. Y'all give him a great big hand. Love Pastor Robert. And it's an honor to be here with each and every one of you guys. And I'll tell you, men's conference is awesome. Like, everything about it is awesome. It's like all like man stuff. It's like food. It's like meat. It's dangerous things. The only thing that I don't like about men's conference is this idea that we have to go, we have to get a hotel, and we have to sleep in a room with another dude. Because I'm like, everything, I'm like, men's summit.
Sleep in a room with another guy. I'm like, no.
Now, I'm originally from Louisiana, so I'm close. Yeah, some Louisiana boys here. So we close cousins with Boudreaux Thibodeau. So Boudreaux Thibodeau went to a men's conference, and they were a little frustrated. You know, Thibodeau and all the other guys were a little frustrated because Boudreaux snores real bad. And so they were like, listen, we can't sleep in the room. Like, one dude can't sleep in there, you're going to get no sleep. So we have to take turns. So they took turns, and the first night, Boudreaux slept in there, and Thibodeau snored all night. And next morning at breakfast, Boudreaux came down. He was just bleary-eyed. And they were like, what happened? He's like, oh, Sha, he fell asleep right when I got in there, and I just sit there, and I just watch him all night long. So the next night, it was Pierre's night, and so Pierre, He stayed in there with Thibodeau. The next morning, he came down. He was just bleary-eyed. They said, what happened? He said, oh, he snored like a log truck. I watch him all night long. And the next night, it was Troy, and Troy stayed there. And the next morning, Troy came down, and he was bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. And they were like, why are you so happy? He's like, oh, I slept like a baby. They said, how you sleep like a baby with Thibodeau snoring like a log truck? He said, oh, I heard what y'all said. He says, so when we went in there, I just walked over to him while he in his bed. I took him in. I kissed him on the cheek and him watch me all night long. Come on, Men's Summit. You better watch yourself, boy. All right. Okay. I'm supposed to preach. Y'all gonna be telling that joke. That's a good one. Let's give the Gateway men's team a great big hand. Scott and James and the whole team. You guys are crushing it, man. Amazing. While we go to Isaiah chapter 40, if our sound guys could just turn my monitor up just a little bit. Your boy's kind of a Pentecostal preacher, so I rear back and throw down. I don't want to scream my voice out. A little Babdecostal, you know. So Isaiah chapter 40. Now, I got to tell you, I feel this really strongly. And I feel like I've come with a word to kick this conference off with for somebody. And I want to give you context here because Isaiah is doing something very strange. He's speaking to the children of Israel who are getting ready to go into captivity. And he's telling them what they're going to say. And he's challenging what they're going to say before they even say it, which is very weird. So what he's doing essentially, and it's awesome, is he's challenging their thought process. Because how many of us know before a word comes out, it begins as a thought or an idea? And he says this, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 27. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? They're complaining. And my just claim is passed over by my God. Now, what I love about this is he doesn't disregard that they have a claim. In fact, he says it's a just claim. So many of us have a real issue. We have a real challenge. We have a real problem. And so I want you to turn to your neighbor and I want you to say, hey, man, the struggle is real. The struggle is real. Because how many of you know somebody who will downplay what you're dealing with? Like you're like, oh, bro, it's been killing me. They're like, it's been killing me too. They make everything better than you. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, man, I've been dealing with some allergies. They're like, I have walking pneumonia. Can never beat them. They downplay everything that you deal with. Isaiah's saying, listen, I'm not downplaying the issue that you have a real issue. I hate it when somebody acts like what I'm dealing with right now isn't a big deal. Super Christians drive me crazy. You know what I'm talking about. There's probably not many of them here. They left when we started playing U2. They were out. Where the streets have no names, I'm out of here. It's heaven, money. Calm down. You know what I mean? When you look at somebody and you're like, man, I'm going through something. They're like, God's going to get you through that right now. Don't you worry about it, brother. Don't you speak negativity. You speak positivity. Well, I'm speaking positively. I'm positive that I'm going through something right now. Come on, brother. God is good all the time and all the time. He doesn't answer email. He answers an email. Come on, be a Christian, man. Have some faith. You just want to slap him, you know? A few years ago, we had a youth conference at our church, and I told my daughters, I have 5 kids, and at that time, we only had 3 at that time, and I told my daughters, and I said, listen, hey, I want you to get it fired up, and if you invite a bunch of your friends, as many friends as you invite, you get them to the house, we will take them all. You just get them all, we'll take them there. And my daughter looked at me, she was like, Dad, you ain't gonna be able to take them all. We don't have enough room. I was like, girl, I'll get a van. And they had 14 friends show up. And so I had to be good on my word because we couldn't fit them all in our cars. So I went to rent a van. We called this place and I told my wife, I was like, rent the cheapest, it had to be a 15 passenger van. I said, rent the cheapest van that you can rent. So she rented this van and she took me to the place and she dropped me off at the place and we were waiting forever, the rental company, waiting forever. And finally, the lady's like, come right this way, sir. I've got your van ready. And I walk out there and I saw it. It's like a nondescript white van, you know, 15 passenger white van. And when she opens the door, the most god-awful putrid smell hit me right in the nose. It was literally like somebody lived there, then they died in there, and they were still in there, and they're just renting it with a dead body in the back. They're like, don't worry about him. He died 6 months ago. He'll decompose and be gone in another 2 years. And I looked at her, like right when they opened it, I looked at her, and I was shocked, and I expected her to be shocked if a skunk sprayed you in the mouth. You know, you wouldn't be like, Dave's like chicken. You know, you wouldn't. I look at her, I'm like, that's terrible. What is that smell? She said, it's okay. It's in the carpet. I was like, that's a problem. It's in the carpet. You need to rip the carpet out and burn it. I told her, I said, I'm not renting the van. She was like, well, that's the only van we have, sir. You'll just have to not rent a van. I was like, I'm not renting the van. I'm out. And I left and I called my wife. She was like, where are you at? I was like, I'm on 59. She was like, well, how long are you going to be here? I was like, it's going to be about 2.5 days because your boy's walking. I'm not renting that van. She was like, did you pastor her through that? I was like, nope, she got angry, Jeremy. She didn't get Pastor Jeremy. She acted like it wasn't a big deal. And when I'm going through something, sometimes I want somebody to act like it's a big deal. Here's the problem with the people of God at this point is they've gotten so focused on their pain that they can't see their promise. They've gotten so focused on their issue and they expected it to be easier. You ever said this? Why is life so hard? Life is so hard. Well, welcome to life. Life is hard. In fact, if you want to know the truth, your wife ain't here. Marriage is hard. Oh, now y'all going, amen. Some of y'all, some of them, Pastor Rob, they didn't worship the whole worship. They're like, amen. It's good preaching right there. Somebody's Facebook live and your wife's watching you. Just don't go home. You sleep with Thibodeau a couple more nights. We wonder why life is so hard. I thought it was going to be easier. We always say things like this. We always say, well, this young generation now, they've had everything handed to them. And they have. A lot of them have. Had a lot of things handed to them. My kids asked me not long ago. They said, hey, Dad, can we get an allowance? And I laughed. They said, can we get an allowance? I was like, no. And my oldest daughter, she was like, why not? All of our friends have allowances. I was like, and the world is going to be a rude awakening for them whenever they get out of the house and realize nobody just walks up and is like, hey, listen, I just decided I'm going to give you some money every week for nothing. I told him what my dad told me whenever I asked my dad. I was about 13. I was like, hey, Pop, can I have an allowance? He goes, you already have one. I was like, well, he goes, I allow you to live in my house. If y'all ain't taking notes, that right there is good material, boys. The challenge is oftentimes we are guilty as a pastor of preaching promises and not pain. We read scriptures from one angle, Psalms chapter 9, verse 9. The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in the times of trouble. That's good preaching right there, but that means I'm probably going to go through some oppression and I'm going to go through some trouble. 1 Peter chapter 5 and 7, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you, which means I'm probably going to have moments and seasons of anxiety. 2 Corinthians 12 and 9, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. That's awesome, but it means I'm probably going to deal with some weakness. I'm going to realize how hard marriage is. I'm going to realize how hard my own issues are, my own unresolved father issues that I deal with, my challenges with failure, my life when I look at myself and I think I should be further along than where I'm at. Or I judge myself based on somebody else's success. I deal with weakness and I deal with pain. And I want success. I want to see God do great things. And I expect it to be easier than this. I was at a conference a few years back, and Pastor Stephen Furtick was there, and he was preaching, and he gave away a trade secret that pastors use. He talked about how whenever we're preaching, we can tell whether you're with it or not. Am I right? We can tell. I can look out there, I can see you. At the 9:30 service at our church last weekend, I watched a brother fall asleep. Literally, I was preaching. I even preached right at him. I preached a little bit harder, and he was like, literally, it was him saying, you're not good enough. That was it. It's like, God, I'm doing my best. Strike him with a bolt of lightning. My grace is sufficient for thee. And Stephen Furtick said, he said, what happens is we'll end up trying to wake you up a little bit by preaching something that'll help you a little bit, get in your world a little bit, make you feel excited, say something like, your answer is on the way. Your breakthrough is coming. That wall is gonna fall and God is gonna give you the victory. You're missing your cue. Oh, there, calm down. And then we'll say something like, harvest time. It's harvest time in your life. Who wants to see a harvest happen in your life of all the seeds that you've planted rising up and coming back to you? And we get excited about it. And so that's, yeah, okay, it's cool, cool. Thanks, guys. You did exactly what I needed you to do. That's perfect. Finally got there. But the challenge is, anybody ever been on a farm? Anybody ever raised on a farm? Anybody ever worked on a farm? What's harvest season like? It's hard. It's tough. It's early in the morning and late at night. Hey, can we go out? No, we can't go out. It's harvest time. I gotta be out in the field. Well, I'm not gonna like you anymore if you don't like me, if you don't give me some time. I ain't got time for you. Stuff is growing right now that I have to deal with and take care of. What we don't often see is the hardest season of your life might be the most productive season of your life. And when it gets hard and when it gets painful, there's a blessing in the pain. So embrace the pain, baby. God's doing something in you that productivity can't. Nothing will define you like pain will define you. Nothing will make you the man that God has called you to be like a little bit of pain, like a little bit of friction. That's what creates movement. Wondering why you got so much friction in your marriage right now. It's because it's so cold and dry. God is trying to move that thing and heat it up a little bit so that you can have what God has designed for you to have. Oh, I'd drop it right now if I wasn't done. Turn to your neighbor and say, there's a blessing in my pain. If you want victory, at some point you got to fight. You got to embrace the pain. Isaiah goes on. I love this. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 28. He says, have you not known? Here's his answer. Have you not heard? Like, listen, I understand you have a just claim. I'm not downplaying your struggle, but I just want to give you a different perspective. Have you not known? Have you not heard the everlasting God? That's what the commas mean. The Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is he weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the weak and to those who have no might. My God increases strength. Y'all don't know how your boy was raised. I was raised in 4-hour church. So, scaring the white people. That's what's happening right now.
Oh, my goodness, Terry. He's very excited.
Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, but those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. And if I was in an old school church, I'd say, teach me, Lord, teach me, Lord, to wait. Remember that? But it doesn't say God shall run. It doesn't say God shall mount up. It says they shall mount up with wings as eagles. And God is going to give you the power, and God is going to give you the strength, that in the waiting, you'll still be running. In the waiting, you'll still be flying. In the waiting, you'll still be walking. But you got to trust the process. God will never give you a life that makes him unnecessary. Some of us pray that God removes the very things that are defining us. Oh, God, would you move this mountain? Some mountains were made to be moved and others were created to be climbed. I would suggest that you put your climbing boots on and get to work, because that's what's going to strengthen your legs so that you can stand on the top of that thing and declare, I have the victory. God's called you to greater than where you are, but you've got to believe that he can do it. Weakness is where we realize that we need help. You usually understand how weak you are when you're trying to prove how strong you are. You ever had that moment? Carrying in the groceries? It's a problem only us brothers can understand. She comes home. She's like, hey, they're in the back of the truck. You're like, got this. All of them at one trip. Plastic bags, line all the plastic bags up, line them all up, snake your arm through, snake, 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 snake. And you're walking through, and you're making sure your neighbors see it. Yeah. And then that one can of Hormel chili falls from the broken bag, breaks your pinky, you drop them all. Your wife looks at you and says, what's wrong with you? Testosterone, I don't know. I remember one time. Guys, the real preacher will be here tomorrow. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be super powerful, super deep words from God. I remember one time me and my wife, we were doing some shopping. I mean, my wife was doing some shopping at Home Goods store. And we went in there, and she was picking out a rug. And it was like a 12-foot rug, and they have them hanging. And she was like, hey, what do you think of this rug? And I was like, love it. And she was like, what about this one? I was like, love it. And she was like, which one you like better? I was like, love them. Has your wife ever hit that decision dilemma, like where she tries on an outfit and she comes out, she's like, do you like this? And you're like, love it. So you look awesome, right? I mean, because if she ever says, does this make me look fat? Just let me help you. I want to preach to you right now. This is not even in the notes. Let me just help you. If you're young, you're newly married, and your wife ever looks at you and says, does this make me look fat? There's only one answer. No. Girl, you look fine. God must have made you out of water and turned you into fine. You look good, girl. Listen, even if she doesn't, God is going, it's okay. It's okay, my son. I give you a pass on this one, my child. I give thee a pass, my son. So we finally picked this rug out, and these two sweet Hispanic ladies came out, and they didn't speak a lot of English, and they began to talk about how to take this rug down, and then they began to argue with one another, and I tried to talk to them, and I, like, have you ever tried to talk to somebody who their English is not their first language, and so you just talk louder? I am happy to help you. Like, that's not helping. And when my wife talks to somebody who English is not their first language, she talks louder and with an accent. Like, we're at a Mexican food restaurant. She's like, I would like the tacos. I was like, that's not even the right, that's Asian. Wait. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that she was offensive to you. And so they start arguing. I back out. They start arguing. I'm talking like, no, 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 no. And they're like, chaos, loca, pasa. They're like all this stuff. Vamanos. No, 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 no. And like all of this stuff. Literally, it felt like an episode off of Telemundo. Like, seriously. Telemundo. Like I thought about like just stepping in and be like, señoritas, Telemundo, and like slapping somebody. You know what I mean? I'm never coming back, guys. This is it. So finally, they get it down, they roll it up, and they're going to hoist it and carry it out. And I'm like, no, my mama raised me right. I can't let y'all carry this out. I got to carry this for you. Ladies, let me carry this. Por favor, let me carry this. And they're like, okay, okay. And then they set it down. And when I try to pick it up, I realize how freakishly strong they were. And now I'm trying to carry this thing. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha. I'm trying to put it over my other shoulder like some kind of weird Easter drama where I'm trying to carry the cross as a rug. It's weird. And my daughters, who happen to be 7 and 8 at the time, are like, Dad, can you use some help? And they like got on one end and got on the other. And I'm like, I could have had this. I just like to use my kids as helpers. And it hurt my ego because I didn't want help. But when you go through enough pain, the blessing of pain is pain will push you to partnership. And when you get in partnership with the right person, when you hurt long enough till you finally realize I can't carry this on my own, you will reach out to someone who can change your destiny. The challenge is you got to make sure the right person is speaking into your world. I remember, and I told you guys about it last year, so I won't belabor the point. The first 5 years of our marriage was tumultuous. It was challenging. In fact, it involved a 27-month separation where she lived in a house and I lived in a house, and we passed the kids back and forth, and it was brutal. And I remember complaining about it, being frustrated about it. I remember I went to an old bishop. I went to old Bishop Tenney, and I looked at him, and I said, Bishop Tenney, I don't know why I'm going through this. And he said, Jeremy, never despise anything that drags you to the feet of Jesus. Everybody needs an old bishop in their life to help straighten them up a little bit, to help shake you a little bit. If all you've got is sinful sympathizers in your life, you need to refriend. You need to have a friendectomy and cut some of those people off and get some of the brothers that are with you on this trip to say, hey, remember what we conquered at Men's Summit? Let's go. We are known by a holy God, and we can do it. You can do this. Get some people who will help you fix your focus. There's patterns in your life. You've picked them up. Let me show you something, okay? All right. I don't know if you sing or not. You guys sang awesome during worship. Wasn't that worship team unbelievable? Pastor Robert, just amazing. Gateway worship, unbelievable. That one dude started singing. I literally thought it was a lady. I was like, that is crazy. And then he was unbelievable. And then he would drop down into a lower register. It was crazy. Just unbelievable. Sometimes I don't process what I'm saying. Rewind. He was a great singer, guys. How about this guy right here? So let's sing together. I'm family with Gateway. Okay, let's sing together. Okay, here's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna do a movement, and I'm gonna sing along with it, and then you do the same noise that I do with the movement, and you'll get it. Okay, bye. ba, 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 ba. Oh, give yourselves a hand. That was amazing. Here's what's crazy. Some of you guys would never make it in choir. But what's awesome about that is you learned the pattern very quickly. And I didn't teach you that I was going to go up. I didn't really tell you what I was doing. You learn patterns by influence and repetition. And so I didn't even have to explain where we were going. You knew automatically. You were able to adapt and adjust because of the person that you were following. The patterns in your life came through influence and repetition. So you ought to go back and take inventory instead of blaming other people. Say, who am I allowing to influence my life? And maybe I should get somebody else speaking into me. Get somebody who can help you with perspective on your marriage and your career. Thankful that a guy like Todd, who's helping lead men's ministry, doing an incredible job, had a business, listened to Pastor Robert, started employing those business practices, did well in business, switched over into full-time ministry, crushing it in ministry because you surrounded yourself with the right people. Get somebody who can help you see perspective. Nobody was better at perspective than the Apostle Paul. Here's what he says, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17. For our light affliction, which is prison and torture and all kind of crazy. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Here's what he's saying. Adversity won't work for you as long as you're staring at it. If you look at adversity, you focus on adversity, you whine about adversity, you complain about adversity, and you don't look at things that are eternal, the adversity won't help you. But if I will realize that God can use that adversity to make me who I am, and I turn my whining into worship, and I learn how to, in the middle of a hard life and a hard situation and a hard moment, to throw my hands in the air and say, God, I don't know where you are right now, and I don't know why I'm going through this, but I give you glory, and I trust you when I can't track you, and I can't doubt you because I know too much about you. Pain pushes you to partnership, and partnership produces promise. Isaiah 40, 29, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Here's the challenge. The challenge is oftentimes when we come to a conference like this, when I come to a conference like this, I hear somebody preach like Mike Todd, who's just crushing it. And by the way, if you don't follow him on Instagram, you ought to follow him on Instagram. I get great words from you just about every day, and it's phenomenal. I preach some of your stuff. I had to take some of your stuff out of this sermon. It's like they've already heard that. I hear it all the time. The problem is, a few years ago at Gateway Conference, when I was sitting right up here, I remember thinking, I know God's doing it for them, but how could he do it for me? I mean, I love hearing Craig Rochelle, and he was preaching that night, and I love hearing Craig Rochelle, and I know God can do it for him, but what about me? You think God loves him more than he loves you? All you got to do is study this book, and you'll find men like Moses, who was a murderer and postponed his destiny by 40 years because of a mistake that he made, and God still used him. And David, who's an adulterer and has the lady's husband killed, and God still uses him. Or Paul, who incited rebellion against the Christian church, and God finally had to have a day of reckoning with him, but he still used him and wrote half the New Testament. You're average. I'm so tired of hearing, you guys are amazing. You're average. You're normal. You brothers are ordinary. Let me tell you about the power of ordinary. Acts chapter 4, verse 13. When they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished and they took note that these men had been with Jesus. If you want to go where God has called you to go, you are going to have to partner with God to get there. You can't get there on your own. You're too normal. You're too average. You're too ordinary. But with the power of a holy God behind you, nothing is impossible. If you look that word up in the King James Version, it says they were ignorant and unlearned men. In the Texas King James Version, it says they were ignorant. And God still used them. And everybody around them was astonished, and they knew these men had been with Jesus. What happens, gentlemen, when we get home from Men's Summit and we begin to do feats for the kingdom of God and we begin to see lives change? Here's what people will say. That guy was ordinary 2 weeks ago. I don't know what happened, but I think he spent a little time with Jesus. Let's go home and ignite our churches. Let's go home and ignite our campuses. Let's go home and serve the kingdom. For the glory of the King. God's called us beyond ourselves, and it'll take God to get us there. The challenge is, I have 3 minutes. Have a seat. It's for Pac and Biggie.
What?
All right.
Terry, who's Pac?
If you want partnership to produce promise, you got to let God in on the struggle. You got to let him in on it. I remember when my daughter had a school project due. I think she was in the third grade. It was one of those habitats, you know, little shoebox habitat. And she opted to do frozen tundra. Baby girl, can't we choose desert? Sand. A. No, Dad, I want to do frozen tundra. And she came to me, she said, will you help me? And I said, yes, I will. And so we went to the store. And $55 later. And a Lou Casey boot box, yes, sir. Not a Nike box, a boot box. We had an amazing frozen tundra. I even, like, we bought these little polar bears. I cut one of them in half. Looked like he was coming out of the water. It was amazing. She said, will you walk with me into school and bring this in with me? I said, absolutely, proudly. As we walked into school, and kids began to look. One little boy looked at her shoebox and then looked at his and began to cry. I realized I might have overdone it. A wee tad. And all the kids in her classroom abandoned their shoeboxes and ran over to look at hers. And while they were looking at this amazing frozen tundra, she was looking at me, and she wrapped her arms around me and she said, you're the best dad in the world. And I lived for that moment. And here's what I want you to know. What I did was not based on a requirement. It was based on a request. I wasn't required to help her with that. She just requested that I get involved. And I took it to a level that she could have never taken it to by herself. I didn't do it all for her. We worked together, and she realized the power of partnership. You have a holy heavenly Father who's just waiting at the gates of heaven, at the gates of your heart, on the doorstep of your destiny, saying, please, let me be involved with what you're doing. Because when I realize that partnership produces promise, promise will produce power. Turn to your neighbor and say, promise produces power. Promise produces power. This is a lever or a lever if you're from Texas. There's three parts. This is the load, this is the arm, and this is the fulcrum. The fulcrum is the piece of this invention that changes everything. Without it, you have no leverage. We all know that if I push on this, I can lift that as long as this is in place. Here's what I want you to understand. I love this. This fire lights me up. Science. This is called the load end. And this is called the effort end. It's going to take some effort to get rid of some of the stuff you've come in here with, of some of the baggage and the expectations and the challenges. It's not going to just be gone immediately. It's going to be a fight that you're going to have to be in. But the beautiful thing is, you're not going to be by yourself. We have a holy God. He looks a lot like an iceberg. There's just a little bit showing, but there's a whole lot beneath the surface. And if I'll push on him, he'll push on that. I don't have to fight that. I just have to worship him. I have to put a little effort into worship and praise and asking God to do. Now here, listen. Listen, and I'm almost done. I want you to know, here's the challenge. Here's what most of us do, though. We don't want God to know about our problems. So we get God as far from our issue as we can. We act like we got it all together. We walk like we got it all together. We talk like we got it all together. But there's secret sin and negativity and depression and anxiety that we don't even want to talk about with God. The power of this whole invention is the closer I get the fulcrum to the load, the less effort it takes for me to move what's creating a challenge in my life. You have got to get God so close to your issues that they become his problem and not yours. That they become his desire to get you free from that and not just yours. They become, the onus is on God to set you free from what you're dealing with if you'll expose it to him. Here's what I want you to know. Stand with me all across the room. Here's what I want you to know. God's called you to do something great. And it's going to take pain to get you there. And at some point, you're going to have to realize that God has called you specifically. Look at me. You. Big guy in the white shirt. You. What's your name? Michael? Was that what you said? God's called you, Michael. Guy up there with the blue shirt and the white up top. Yeah, that's you. You're looking down. Yeah, that's you. What's your name? James. God's called you, James. Younger guy beside you. What's your name, man? David. God's called you, David. Don't you wave at everybody. How old are you, man? How old? 13 years old at Men's Summit. Come on, somebody. Don't tell me God can't put a passion on the inside of a 13-year-old boy at a life-changing weekend. But it's going to take somebody saying, yes, I will. Yes, I'm in. Yes, I'm ready. No more waiting, guys. The choice is up to you. I received a letter, and then I'll close. A few years ago, it said this: my mother was a single mom. Life wasn't easy growing up, but we loved one another dearly. She worked like a dog with only an 8th grade education to support 4 little girls and never got any child support. I knew that my mom loved me and she did the best that she knew how, but there were always habits and addictions lurking in her life that continually knocked her off course. And at the age of 11, my world fell apart. My mother divorced her 3rd husband, which was my 1st stepdad. My biological father had left when I was little, and we moved from Corpus Christi, Texas, to Oklahoma City. I was heartbroken and devastated. I was starting to realize the life that was normal to me wasn't really normal at all. My mother's behaviors and habits were wildly out of control. I resented everything. I felt like I was leaving my daddy because he was the only man in my life that I had ever called dad. My biological father had been gone a long time, and now another dad was leaving. And when we got to Oklahoma City, my grandmother began taking me to her church, and I'd never felt anything like this. It was life-changing. I remember walking down that long aisle and kneeling down at the front and giving my heart to Jesus. There was a profound moment of realization in my life that there really was a love that wouldn't leave. And that's the moment that God truly became my father. It was like I was baptized with a spirit of determination that no matter what happened, I was going to stay with Jesus. And little did I know, how much I would need that determination and the protecting hand of my new father. I lived through verbal, mental, physical, and emotional abuse constantly. Somehow, my conversion to Christ had caused my mother to feel guilty. It was hard for her to take that I had found a real love, and the abuse got worse. My mother married again, and in that marriage, we became a blended family and acquired two stepbrothers. The marriage didn't last long, but during that time, I was able to lead my two stepbrothers to Christ. After a year and a half, the relationship dissolved, and mother started taking large doses of prescription drugs and became abusive. I knew what it was for my own mother to pull out a loaded 45 and hold it against my temple and scream, "I'm gonna blow your brains out." It was the drugs talking. I knew she loved me, but it was a horrible thing for an eighth grader to go through. I remember running next door to a neighbor's house in tears, and I shook as they called the police, and a judge committed my mom to a state mental hospital for 6 months. My three sisters and I lived with our grandmother. This was the greatest moments of my childhood because grandmother took us to church when she could, and I felt the love of God so strongly. When my mom got out of the institution, we went back to live with her, and she was angry and bitter and slipped right back into the drug habit, and there were different men coming in and out of our home every week. When I was a sophomore in high school, she met another man and built a relationship with him, and we knew he had been in prison, but we didn't know what for. He had been convicted of rape and gone to prison for it, but mother didn't know this. Would leave us alone at the house with him for hours, and I knew that God was protecting us years later. She finally kicked him out, moved on to husband number six, but he couldn't handle the lifestyle of drugs, drinking, and partying. She would grab me by the hair of the head and knock me into the door facings, sling me into the coffee table, screaming and cussing. I struggled not to believe the things she would say about me. Spankings were beatings. She could backhand you quicker than you could blink, but through it all, I knew that God had a purpose for my life. I was so desperate for God that I'd ride to church with anybody who would take me. Oftentimes, riding in the back of a pickup truck, a man in the church would drive 30 miles just to get me into the presence of God. I remember a few times mother would come into the church high on drugs and scream for us to get up. And at the age of 16, in a moment of anger, I finally threw up my hands and told my mother, "That's it, I'm quitting church." She stopped and looked at me through clear eyes and in a soft voice said, "No, you won't. Quit going to church. I'm miserable and you don't want to turn out like me." And after I graduated from high school, my mother married husbands 7, 8, and 9. But my life has taken a different path. And when I walked into Hope City, I felt that same presence of God that I felt as an 11-year-old girl, desperate for love and acceptance. Thank you for providing a place where people can find healing, hope, and happiness. My story has a happy ending. A year and a half before my mama died, with tears in her eyes, she gave her heart to Jesus. And I thank God every day for churches like Hope City who reach hurting people. It was because of a church like this that an 11-year-old girl gave her heart to Christ, and I never looked back. And here's what I want you to know about that. That letter was from my mama. And that's what she walked through to get me here. And I'm grateful for some man that I don't know that I'll ever be able to thank this side of heaven, because he decided I'll take my truck and I'll drive 30 miles to pick up this kid in my already packed cab. She'll have to ride in the back of the truck, but I'll do whatever it takes to get this little girl into the presence of God. And because some man decided I'll use what I have, here I am speaking to you, saying use whatever you have. God is waiting on your yes. Somebody shout, yes. Father, we thank you right now for your power and your presence that we feel so strong permeating the atmosphere here. I pray for each and every man who's on a journey with you, that those who have not said yes yet would say unequivocally, unapologetically, unswervingly, yes. Whether they're sitting in this room or they're incarcerated, you can use them no matter where they are. And you've called them, help them to remember with God
all things are possible. And your power is made perfect in our weakness. So let us be weak before you and trust you to lift the things that we can't lift. In Jesus' name, shout unto God with a voice of triumph.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to rate it and subscribe to stay up to date with new episodes. If you'd like more info on our men's conference, please visit menssummit.com. Until next time, have a blessed day.